Daniel Lasor, speaking, and I told you last time in our previous radio program my personal story, and I told you how I was in the church, and I left the church and made a tshuva. And I told you the entire story. It was took me a few hours to tell you the story. And I would like to just to end up with the story and tell you that one day when the Christmas time came, and I was already convinced not to go to the church. And basically, I realized that through arguments, through theological arguments with some rabbis in upstate New York, that I've made a mistake by choosing Christianity over Judaism, and by getting baptized to Christianity, or by getting married to a gentle woman and losing my own Jewish identity. Then I started to really not go to the church, and besides, not only not to go to the church, but also I told you how I got separated from my wife, but I didn't go back. I didn't go back to really study Judaism. I just went back to business, and I went on with my life. And one day, after I gave a lecture, if I was invited to give a lecture about a tefillin in a church, if you recall the story, and then Dr. Michael invited me to his house, and basically what he showed me was the the Temple of Jerusalem, a model that he built in his living room for over 3 years, in the right measurement, equal to the measurement of the Temple of Jerusalem. I mean, in a You said Knemida, and basically, what he showed me was very impressive, and I asked him, "Why are you doing it? What for? Aren't you a Christian?" And he told me that he came to believe to a conclusion after he made his own research that Judaism was the right way. And he become a Noah observant to the seven commands of Noah, and he told me, and I told you about the conversation that we had, the interesting conversation that rose some questions, and basically made me think again about my decisions in life. But one day, when the Christmas time came, and I left my job because I promised to Dr. Yitzhak Batesh that if I will find Judaism right, then I will not go back to work with missionaries, and I can find another job. So what I've done is basically I quit my job, and I started to I made a phone call to my friends in New York and asked them to send me some merchandise, some sunglasses, fashion, design, and to basically fly them over the ocean to the islands to Key West, Key Largo, Key Biscayne, to all the keys, and they agreed to send the merchandise to me. And basically, after I loaded the airplane, I took 210 Cessna, and I flew over the ocean. I started at 6 p.m. It was afternoon. I flew over the ocean. I saw I saw the sunset, and I was flying over the ocean and to the islands, and everything was already made up by, you know, phone calls, appropriate phone calls, and they were supposed to wait for me and take the merchandise and that they ordered, and to go on from one island to another. And basically, when I landed in Key West, it was at a very late hour. It was 1 o'clock in the morning. I was exhausted from a long business day, and after giving the merchandise to the people that ordered them, and I grabbed something to eat in Key West, and then I went back to the airport. I started to eat, and in the airplane, and then I tried to take some rest because I was very, very tired, and I didn't feel comfortable enough to sit in the airplane and to have a nap. I just decided after hour or hour and a half to fly back to Miami, fly back to Boca Raton, and I got a permission to do so from the airport. I taxied to begin the flight, and I got a departure. And after takeoff, I was climbing to 700 feet, and then I started to fly a straight and level flight to Miami. I was listening to the weather briefing, and as I was flying and listening, I realized that something is going on, and the weather are getting worse and worse, and I was supposed to land in one of the islands, I think it was Key Largo, to refuel the airplane. I knew that I don't have enough fuel, and I have to refuel in Key Largo. As I was flying, then the situation got worse, and then when I contact the ground control in Key Largo, they told me that they don't have a condition for landing and to go on with the flight to Miami. I contact Key West again and to see whether I can fly back, and they told me the same thing. The situation got worse, and the weather was not in a good condition for landing, and I went on with the flight toward Miami, and one of the engine quit. The left engine quit. I had to fly sliding flight. Basically to correct myself when I fly with my one engine. And then I contact Miami, and Miami Airport, And basically, when they saw me on the screen and they asked me how much fuel I have, and I was telling them how much fuel I got, and they gave me a heading to an emergency landing a place because I was very short with fuel. The second engine quit, and I was gliding over the ocean. It was pretty high. It was 7,000 feet, but it's not enough to really reach Miami. And basically, the situation got even worse and worse, and I couldn't even. I was not sure that I'm going to be able to make it to the emergency landing. And like calculating the wind and the height and the airspeed, and basically I was losing altitude, and the person that was there in the ground control in Miami asked me. Usually they don't have enough time. Everything is a very short commands, because it's a class A airspace. It's a very busy sky, and he told me, "You've got an accent. Where are you from?" And I told him that I'm from Israel, and then he started to ask me personal questions. Does it mean that you're a Jew? And I told him, it doesn't really mean that I'm a Jew, but I am a Jew. Then he told me, so why don't you pray now? Because it's you're in a very bad situation. you're losing altitude. You don't have engine, and basically, it seems like you're not gonna make it to the. Emergency airport, emergency landing place. And basically, I didn't know whether I'm supposed I was supposed to jump from the airplane because I couldn't make it, and I didn't have a weather condition to make it the landing anyways. So, while losing altitude, I started to think of what should I do? I opened the door of the airplane where I was supposed to leave the airplane or jump from the airplane to the ocean. But then I realized that the FAA, the rescue people will probably come in a few hours and find me right there in the ocean. Who knows how they're going to find me, because it was dark night. I knew that if I'm going to jump, then I'm going to see the sharks. And they're going to surround me from all over, and who knows in what condition they're going to find me, if they're going to find me. So I was out of fear. I made it my own decision. I decided not to jump from the airplane. I closed the door. I was completely wet. And then I lost more altitude and more altitude, and I found out. I knew that I'm supposed to be drowned in the water, in the ocean, and I started to fear so much that of what's going on in immediate minutes. I'm about to lose my life. That's what I felt. I knew that I can lose my consciousness and maybe drown in the water or get a punch from from something and then drown with the airplane. I was supposed to jump, but I couldn't. I didn't have enough courage to do so. And I was losing the altitude and couldn't see outside. It was not a visual flight no more, because I couldn't see from the window no more. And then basically I lost altitude, and then I started to, and then I screamed Shema Israel so loud and in so much fear of what's going on and what's going to happen in immediate minutes, that basically I shouted Shema Israel, and surprisingly I shouted Shema Israel. It was even a big surprise to me, because at that time I was in between cultures, between Christianity and Judaism. I was hesitating always. I was jumping from one set of mind to another, from one concept to another, and I didn't know how to go on with my life. But when Shema Israel came out of my mouth, it was much stronger than me. It came from much deeper than I could even imagine. And that all of a sudden I felt that I'm landing, I can feel the wheels of the airplane on the field, basically on the field. And I, despite the fact that I couldn't see, and despite the fact that I've been asked to leave the airplane, to jump from the airplane, and basically I didn't give up, I couldn't make the landing. But then I felt something hard underneath the wheel, and then I made some breaks, and I knew that I have made it. Basically, after stopping the airplane on the field, I couldn't even see anything outside. It was very, very raining so bad that I couldn't see anything. I opened the door, but when I opened the door, I realized that the wing from the side of mine as a pilot, from the left side, the wing was over the ocean and over the water, and I realized that it's a road that above the water, and when I opened the other door, the right door, and I left the, I went off the airplane, I was really curious where I am, and I basically stepped forward to see where the road end. It was 2 meters ahead of me that the road ended, and I was supposed to fell to the water if I would continue on a little more. So I was completely wet, and I went back to the airplane, waiting to the FAA and to the rescue people to come, and they come after over 40 minutes. But then I was waiting there, and I had a lot of time to think, why did I scream Shema Israel? The only light that I got back then was the light of my own airplane, and I was sitting there shaking and realizing that a miracle happened here. I couldn't actually fly the airplane, land the airplane. It was not me that was landing the airplane, because I didn't have control over the situation. It was either the Ashgacha making the landing and I'm alive or not. After I went back to Boca Raton, and the FAA took me back to flew me to Boca Raton, and their research conclusion was that I basically I'm alive. They don't have much of an explanation. I was not supposed to land on the field. I couldn't even make it. According to my fuel condition and the height and the weather and the situation, then I started to really think, what's going on? If you remember the story from the beginning, then you probably remember that in Israel, when I was young and I was running in the desert, and I got caught by in the desert, in the middle of the desert, losing my way during the night and losing the strength of my body basically fainting in the desert and waking up early in the morning, not knowing where I am on the map, and I realized that I'm very far away from civilization, and I didn't know where I am. And as a child, and I started to scream Shema Yisrael. It was a Shema Yisrael in the desert. But then, at the age of 34, almost, when I used to live in Fort Lauderdale and have my life there, and then I shouted Shema Yisrael, but it was over the ocean somewhere else, and I realized that God is giving me, and the Ashgacha are giving me the chances that all the chances that I was supposed to be given to realize that somebody is really keeping me alive in a life situations, so I will make my conclusion about life and make a decision what life is all about, what's to search for the definition of life and to make up my mind what do I think about life and how I'm supposed to live them. I become a little more serious about life. And I started to really go to the synagogue to listen to Jewish prayers and for the first time, and to see whether God is present in the synagogue. In the beginning, I didn't feel much. I just was sitting there in the synagogue and staring at the people praying, and I couldn't even follow the siddur and the text. It was too long to me and too complicated in the beginning. But then afterward, I realized that I remember what Dr. Batesh have told me during the argument in upstate New York. And he told me that if I gonna try to outreach Jewish people to convert them to Christianity, so maybe when I will make a tshuva, God will not allow me to make a tshuva and he will close the door at me. So I was afraid that God maybe shut the door, and he probably, because I was a missionary, will not allow me to make a tshuva, or maybe allow me, but not, I'm not going to be able to make it. I didn't understand, in what way and in which way it's going to take place. Maybe the Ashgacha will not leave me. But on the other hand, I was confused because I saw the Ashgacha and I didn't know. It was an inside contradiction or how to. So I decide to drive my car along Miami, South Miami, a beach, and to search for homelessness and to take care of them, to have some, to do some good deeds, some good action, to show some grace toward people, and maybe God will have mercy on me, and He will realize that I'm a good good person, good man. Or I knew that He know my heart. I knew that He probably, but maybe He wants some proofs, or maybe I need to help my luck or to my destiny. And I really started to walk around or drive around and search for homelessness and to bring them home and to have them take a shower at my house, and if they couldn't collect enough charity of $1 to go to a shelter, then I used to add them some more money and then to take them to the shelter, or to take them to a pizza. I remember once that I flew all night over the ocean doing some maneuvers, and you know, couldn't really sleep, and trying to say Tehillim in Hebrew, because it was so confused. But I realized that Christian people are really doing, are really saying it to heal him, the book of Psalms, the book of King David, and the Jewish people are reading the prayers of the Tehillim. So I decided, since I'm an Israeli and since my language is Hebrew, then why shouldn't I read the book of Psalms, the book of King David, in Hebrew while I'm flying? So I called to that flight over the night, Yoshev Besater Elyon, and I was listening to some music while I was doing some maneuvers, and basically I took some tea with me, and I was trying to pray Tehillim. And then when I landed, I didn't go back home. I took my car and I drove to North Miami and South Miami, Miami Beach, and I was searching for homelessness that couldn't get by, and tried to give them some food and to have some, to do some good deeds, and maybe to help some other people. So God will see me. Heaven will see me. I really remember once it was 11:30 at night, and I was searching for homelessness in South Miami Beach, and once I saw a very old man carrying all what he got in life on his shoulder. It was not much. And then I realized, according to his clothing, that he's a really poor man. And I was searching in my pocket, and I found $20 bill, and I gave him, and he was surprised to get a $20 bill from me. And But then I walked. I was supposed to walk to the other side, and then I thought to myself, why don't you invite him to a restaurant or something, or to a pizza, or to eat something? And I walked back, and I put my hand on his shoulder, and I told him, can I invite you to a pizza or to eat something? And then he turned to me with a very severe face, and he asked me, are you a Jew? And I told him yes, and he started to scream and shout. And he told me, and he told me, and he took the $20 bill and he threw it to the floor, and all the people that was walking there in the street stood and came over to see what's going on here. And I was standing, and he shouted at me that go back to your camels, go back to Israel. What are you doing here in our land? And Hitler was supposed to kill you all. And I was, you know, really surprised, and was very anti-Semitic person. And he started to scream and curse, and so I stood there and I didn't respond. Didn't even respond. And then he threw the $20 bill on the ground, and all the people was like, I don't know, maybe 15 people staring at us and saying that I'm just standing there. And he walked away, and I took the $20 bill, and there was a bus station with a garbage can, and I took it and I told him, you don't want the money? I'm a very rich man, and I don't really need the $20 bill, but if you don't have a decency and respect to take it with a human with a prey, then you take it with an insult, and I put it in the garbage, and I told him, you know, I don't need the money, and I put the $20 bill in the garbage. And then I was walking like maybe another 100 feet, and then he ran to the garbage can and he started to take all the garbage outside and to search for the $20 bill, and all the people started to laugh, and I walked away. It was another red light that turned on. What's going on? I was doing something good. I was really trying to do it not for people, but for heaven to see that really I'm doing something for, but also for, because I had a mercy on that person, and I realized that no matter what, anti-Semitism have no border, no. They just hate you as a Jew, no matter what you're going to do. It's just a mysterious thing, something that I have no explanation to it. I went back home. I started to find my way to Judaism. I realized that I cannot run from my own identity. There was a bookstore that used to sell holy books, Judaism books, and when I entered to the book, the person that used to sell the books was a Satmar, a Hasidic, and I somehow chose Mesilat Yesharim. Because Mesilat Yesharim, it's a very thin book, and the letters are very big, and there is points there, and I figured it's something that I can really maybe easily and comfortably read it, and then I can just tell you the Ashgacha, how far the Ashgacha went on with me. I'm married now. I'm the age of 48. I'm living here in Tel Zion, in nearby Jerusalem, in Yehuda v'Shomron, in Benjamin. But I can tell you that I got married with a wife that left the kibbutz, and she got an education of a Shomer HaTzair, and basically the first book that she got from anybody about Judaism was Mesilat Yesharim, same book that I purchased. at the bookstore in Miami. And that Satmel Chasedek, I invited him to fly with me, and he flew with me over, you know, over the ocean and over the city of Miami, and he was very impressed by me. Back then I had a long hair, and I was not exactly fitting the view of a Satmel Chasidic family, but he invited me to Passover Seder at his house. And he had 10 children, and it was so beautiful, and I was listening to the songs, and I was, you know, it was fascinating, and I saw all the silver dishes and all the atmosphere and the songs, and it was so beautiful, and basically when I stare at it from my point of view now, I can tell you that at the same Passover that I started to go and to invite myself or to be invited to a Jewish family, and my wife here in Israel, I didn't meet her yet. I will meet her in a shidduch 2 years after. But she started her tshuva at the same Passover that I started, really curious about Judaism, and I went to that Satmer family. And basically she was on the bus with her viola to play in the Philharmonic in Jerusalem, and she went on with her viola in Haifa, and nearby her in the bus there was a Hasidic young woman. Her name was Brachi. She was a Slonim Hasidic, and she sat by her, and they had a conversation, and that Hasidic young woman told her, you know, you sound very wise woman, but you don't keep Torah and mitzvot, you know, I invite you, but come a little more moderate, and I invite you to come to my house. My father is a very nice person. He will accept you as a guest in Passover Seder. And then Vered, my wife, that will be my wife afterward in 2 years in a shidduch, then she invited herself. She agreed to come to Mea Shearim or to Shmuel HaNavi in Jerusalem, to a Hasidic family, to see the Jewish folklore and to really observe the atmosphere and to enjoy herself from the environment of a Hasidic Slonim family at that same Passover that I started to wake up. Maybe it's a minor things, but for me it's not a minor things. I see the Ashgacha, and I really can tell you that after leaving the States, just like I left Egypt, I sold my airplane as fast as I can. I sold, you know, all the things. I met a very nice rabbi that guided me. His name was Rabbi Avraham Biton, and he took me as a chavruta, and he started to study with me. He told me, now you have to pack your stuff and to sell everything and go back to Israel. You have a mission in life to do, and your mission is not here. Your mission is in overseas. It's back in Israel, and you got to fly back. So what I was just like a child listening to that rabbi that I really held from him as a spiritual man, very great rabbi, I did exactly what he told me to do, and I sold my airplane, and surprisingly I didn't lose money. I got the same amount after using the airplane for over a few years. I got the same money that I bought it for, and